This is By the Horns, Episode 3, with me, Ethan Corbin, and our special guest today, The Armorist. Today's episode is going to be centered around the ideas of freedom, liberty, life, and the pursuit of happiness. And we're going to talk about why freedom is important, what is freedom, what are the enemies of freedom, how can we preserve freedom as individuals and as a nation. And we're going to pull some historical ideas and examples of freedom and liberties and whatnot. And we're going to talk about how freedom can be tied to and how it's important for self-development reasons, which is really the whole premise of this podcast. So we're going to kick off with the Armorist here is going to read us a quote. I'll let you go ahead.
Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to James Madison, wrote, "I hold it that a little rebellion now and then is a good thing, and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical." Which I think more or less effectively sums up the point of this specific episode of the podcast. As Ethan mentioned, talking about freedom, and not only talking about freedom, what it entails, and how to preserve it, which is, you know, obviously the most important thing, in my opinion. And how it relates to self-improvement, which should be self-evident, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, so I have listed here thought number one. What is freedom? Let's define it.
Freedom, I would say, is, at least in the current climate, I would say is simply the awareness of your domestication. In that when you are aware of the institutions and the tools by which you are, but rather the tools by which you are held down with, the things that are a detriment to your freedom, understanding that and being conscious of that, I think is in the modern day what freedom is. But I do think it's not all of what freedom is, in that you know, just being aware of your domestication, just being aware of the fact that you're being stepped on is not enough. You have to act. And I think the other part of, you know, of what freedom is, you know, knowing, you know, is half the battle, and the other half is acting. So I would say what freedom is, I would say, is being conscious of your surroundings, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And acting and preserving that freedom, because if you're not preserving your freedom, it's being eroded away. No getting around that.
Absolutely. So preservation of freedom is going to be thought number three. I want to go ahead and hit some of the negatives here to kick it off. Let's hit the thorn. So we've established what freedom is, and like you said, it's, if you want to sum it up into a couple sentences, What do you want to say for that?
Well, pretty much basically it's in two parts. It is the first part being aware of, you know, of your, like I said, surroundings, if you want to call it that, being aware of your surroundings and then acting to preserve, you know, to preserve your freedoms, you know, to preserve your surroundings, you know, to ensure a free life for your family, you know, and any, you know, your community and any successive generations, you know, that I would say is freedom. Now, that's very, you know, very broad, and we'll get into the intricacies of that and the certain and the other things that are, I guess, conducive to freedom. You know, we can get into that, but on the whole, that's, I would say, basically what freedom is, my definition of freedom.
Awesome. So, what are the enemies of freedom? I know we've definitely greased the wheels a little bit with this topic.
Yeah.
So,
the enemies of freedom, I think, are we had talked about before. You have to look first, before you can understand the larger scale, the social institutions and political institutions that are enemies of your freedom. In order to understand them, you have to scale it back and understand the microcosms, you know, the smaller institutions, the smaller systems, all the way down to the very individual that make up freedom and detriments to freedom. So I guess I would start by, you know, by outlining them. So starting with, you know, the microcosm of the self, you know, the individual person, the biggest enemies to that would be lack of spirituality, poor diet, a sedentary lifestyle. Yeah. And all of those things are, you know, at face value, they don't seem like something that would be a detriment to freedom. They seem like it seems like a whole separate conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you and I both know, you know, as we're, you know, trying to communicate to the listeners, things like, you know, so, you know, I mentioned a sedentary lifestyle. The reason why that is a detriment to freedom, you know, is because you cannot, you will not be able to preserve your freedom if you're a fat ass, basically.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and if you eat unhealthily, you know, sugar, you know, this makes no sense at face value to say the sentence sugar is an enemy to freedom makes like no sense at face value.
Yeah,
but you know, as you and I both know, sugar is it is an all-encompassing dictatorial force, you know, and you can't get away from it. Sugar is like Big Brother.
Yeah,
you cannot get away from it. It is everywhere.
It's in everything,
right?
Except for meat.
And it's right. All right, we'll save that for another one. But yeah. But anyways, but yeah, you know, so sugar is something you can't get away from, and it's terrible for you.
Yeah,
you know, it is the Big Brother of the food world,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Now I don't know how far in depth with that specifically we should go, because we could save that for another episode.
We'll save the detriments of sugar. We'll save the in-depth stuff for the nutrition episode.
Right. Okay.
That is in the physical branch. Right now, we're within the spiritual.
Yeah.
Pillar.
The more abstract.
Yeah.
Branch,
the more.
Right?
Yeah. The abstract.
Philosophical.
Pillar. So essentially, we will briefly hit that things like. We're gonna save this more for other episodes.
Right, right.
But
that's
things that are like things that tie you down.
Right.
Like that
physically
that, things
spiritual.
That tie you down to your primitive desires of taking the easy way and
right.
taking the path of least resistance
right.
are enemies of freedom. And
right.
just a few examples to really interest everybody. Porn.
Sugar.
Porn, sugar.
The two biggest ones.
Yeah, those are the two big ones. Porn and sugar, the two big ones. A few other ones.
Social media.
Social media, video games.
Even just, I mean, those are the biggest ones, inarguably. But yeah, I mean, even
television.
Right, yeah, television, right. Basically, the world in which we live, you know, being that everything is right at our fingertips and that we don't have to really work for anything.
Yeah.
That is an enemy to freedom.
Yeah,
no, it is the enemy to freedom.
Absolutely. Because with freedom comes responsibility, and in order to get freedom, you have to have lots of hard work.
Right, exactly.
And
the issue of, you know, of rights and responsibility is, as Jordan Peterson outlines it, you know, it's something that everyone wants to talk about their rights, you know, of course, in the American political sphere. You know, the left likes to talk about their rights to abortion. The right likes to talk about their rights to guns. You know,
yeah.
the two biggest things. But neither side, admittedly, neither side wants to talk about the responsibilities that come with those things. You know, now, I don't believe anybody has a right to abortion, but that's a topic for another time.
I have a whole branch that came
right,
back.
Right. Obviously, I don't believe anyone has a right to that. But let's say you do. You also have a responsibility to not abuse that right, you know, and same with guns. You have a right to own guns, but you have a responsibility to be safe with those and to use them when needed. I shouldn't get too far off here, but you know, a lot of people they think just owning guns is rebellion. No, you have to use. There's a reason why the world only changes through bullet or ballot. You know, the First Amendment comes first. You know, the right to free speech. You know, obviously, you know, right to vote, right to assemble, all that. And then if that doesn't work, right after that, the Second Amendment. You know, there's a reason why it's right there. It's mm-hmm. you know, First Amendment is your first resort. Second Amendment is, okay, well, they're not listening, let's kill their asses. Yeah, you know that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's more of a point for, that's more for point three. So yeah, yeah. We'll come back to that.
Point three there.
Right.
So the enemies of freedom here. So we've covered
What freedom is, yeah. And we've covered the microcosm of, what the enemies of freedom are on a microscopic scale, as in the individual. You know, we've more or less established that.
Yeah. So you're, for everyone listening,
except for I forgot to mention. I mean, I forgot to go into any depth about lack of spirituality. Christianity, you know, any religion is better than no religion, but Christianity is better than every other religion. That is very much, it is synonymous with freedom in a lot of ways. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people are not going to quite get that. That's going to, you know, to the uninitiated, you know, the atheists and whatever, they're not going to understand that. You know, they're probably, you know, anyone listening right now is probably thinking, okay, well, what, you know, you're listening to all these religious laws, but you're listening to all these religious laws, but you're not listening to, or, you know, you're acting like, you know, you're not listening to these, you know, human, you know, these government laws or whatever. You know, what's the difference? And, you know, why do you even bother listening to these religious laws in the first place? You know, and to that, I would say, religious laws and human laws, you know, the laws of mankind and the laws of God are wholly incomparable. Religious laws, you know, for the most part, again, you know, assuming Christian, you know, I don't know or really care about other religious laws, but, you know, assuming Christian law here, those laws are all morally correct, and thus are not oppressive. Now, man-made, you know, human laws, because they are not made by God, they are subject to human error, you know, and human malice and stuff. As a result of that, they can be oppressive, and they are not always morally correct. Yeah. So, you know, the example that I would use is an example of a morally correct human law would be, you know, you can't rape kids, you know, whatever. That's something that it is not oppressive, because even though it tells you, oh, well, I can't do something, you know, whatever, it's something, it's telling you cannot do something that is, you know, objectively harmful,
like
raping a kid, you know, obviously. Now, an example of a human law that is oppressive is, you know, gun laws, you know, pretty much any one of them, but let's say high-capacity magazines. It is not immoral, it is not morally wrong to own high-capacity magazines, therefore, any law that prevents you from doing it, that is an unjust law, that is an immoral law, and that is an oppressive law. Those are the laws that need to be disobeyed. So, as pertaining to the enemies of freedom, one of the biggest enemies of freedom is not having a good spirituality, you know, is a lack of spirituality, not having a good spiritual connection, you know, to God. In many ways, to be free is to be religious, you know, again, specifically Christian, you know, that frees you in very many ways, you know, so you take, for example, premarital sex. Everyone thinks, oh, well, you know, it's oppressive. I want to have sex with all these different people whenever I want, blah, blah, blah. Anything that tells me I can't do that, well, that's oppressive. How is it not oppressive? Well, those laws, those religious laws, you know, and even, you know, the religious doctrine, it is beneficial. You know, it's not oppressive because it is morally wrong to have, you know, a bunch of premarital sex with all different people for reasons, you know, that I can go into later. You know, I'm sure that, I don't know if wherever you post these, if there can be comments or whatever, but I'm sure you get a lot of comments about that.
Yeah, we'll see.
But the point is, you'll be better off staying with, you know, waiting until you're married and staying with one partner. You know, and that's not just me talking. That's not just the Bible talking. That is supported by science. If you don't believe me, look it up.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest enemy of freedom. You know, is not, and also too. Again, you know, I mentioned before. You are very much liberated when you know, when you can act without fear of the afterlife. In that, if you know that you are acting, you know, if you have a clear moral conscience because you know that you are acting in accordance with God's will, and you know that, you know, whatever fate you may suffer here, you know, on earth, you know that you're, you know, you're not afraid of going to hell, you know you're going to go to heaven, well, that very much emboldens you and empowers you to do what needs to be done here on earth, even if that means sacrificing yourself, but for the good of your community, for the good of your countrymen, for the good of your family. It's very much liberating, arguably the most liberating thing you can do, to know that you can give your life and not worry about eternal damnation. Yeah. That is probably the most liberating thing you can do. Yeah, so
absolutely
right. So I'm sure a lot of the uninitiated, like I said, they might think that abiding by any religious law is slave morality, or that it's that in and of itself is an enemy to freedom, but it is very much not. It is very much a proponent of freedom, if not the biggest proponent of freedom.
Okay.
So I guess I've said my piece about that part.
Awesome. So we've talked about really the individual enemies of freedom, enemies of individual freedom more so.
Right.
Like sugar and, not being spiritual, right. And porn and video games and really all sloth, apathy, right. Whatever word you would like to
ignorance.
Say. So what are the enemies of freedom on the grand scale of things? And this, I think,
where to begin?
I think this will be a wonderful transition into how to preserve
freedom. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. the thing is, there's, I love my country, and I used to love the government of my country. I'm not particularly fond of them much anymore. But yeah, I do not know where to start. So I guess I'll just have to start talking, because there are so many enemies to freedom on the macro scale.
I'll hit you with a few. Macro scale.
The elite, government agencies, corporations, large corporations, all of those are enemies to freedom. But I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. Who poses the biggest threat right now? Let's just say right this very moment with the whole coronavirus thing going on, the quarantine, everything is closed and whatnot, with the exact this very day political climate and American values and American fear, I guess we all, not all of us feel fear. I sure as hell don't.
Right.
But, most Americans are pretty scared right now of what's to come.
Right.
So, poses the biggest threat on a scale of macro freedom as of this very moment?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates.
I would absolutely say Bill Gates. Yeah.
Explain. Tell me why.
He is not, he's a smart guy, but he is not he's not a microbiologist. He is not a virologist. He is not in any way qualified to be trying to create vaccines for this virus. I think, if he weren't trying to make it mandatory that everyone gets the vaccine, and if he wasn't trying to make it so that, ID 2020, which is something that anyone here can look up if they're interested.
Oh, man.
If he wasn't a big proponent of that, you could go so far as to, call his endeavors benevolent in that regard. But they're not. He wants everyone vaccinated. He wants this ID 2020 thing to go into full effect as fast as possible. And that is, that's the work of Satan, right? Yeah. is what that so, is. No matter how benevolent he comes across.
For anyone listening, give me a brief explanation of what exactly is ID 2020. And explain it in a positive light. And then we're going to hit the negatives afterwards. From Bill Gates' perspective, what is ID 2020?
I guess in the most positive way, and I'm really stretching here, but in the most positive way, I guess it would be he wants to in the short term inoculate people from the novel coronavirus, and in the long term, use ID 2020 to. I'm trying to think of how to word this in a positive way.
To keep everyone
safe.
Yeah.
Which as it pertains to our podcast, safety, safety and freedom are not mutually exclusive, but safety is a product of freedom, of real freedom. It's
agreed.
It's a product of it, but it is not something, like Benjamin Franklin said, the person who sacrifices his freedom in exchange for safety deserves neither.
I like that.
Yeah, you cannot in exchange for safety give up your liberties because think about it like this. You can be in a prison, you can be in a cell. Well, yeah, you're pretty safe. You know, you're probably, you know, in American jails at least, you're not going to starve to death. You know, you're stuck in whatever solitary confinement. You know, you're not going to be murdered. You're not going to whatever. You're not going to succumb.
You got a roof over your head.
Right. You're not going to succumb to the elements or whatever. So yeah, you're safe as all hell. But are you free? Mm. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's the extreme. You know, but anyways. So yeah, now that I've like thoroughly exhausted my brain trying to figure out what a positive of of ID 2020 would be.
Tell me the real deal.
Yeah, the real deal is that he wants people forced to, basically like the mark of the beast, in my opinion. He wants people forced. He wants everybody to take this vaccine for the coronavirus, which is not only not necessary, it's draconian, and that wanting everybody to take anything into their, whether it be, eating and whatever, to forcefully, to create laws to force people to force everyone to get a vaccine is, I mean, it's absurd on so many levels. It's ridiculous, but on top of that, it would be one thing if he was just, blindly, he just was so sure of vaccines and so sure that they worked, and he just truly wanted everyone to be healthy, which obviously is, I don't think his real agenda, but even if that was, you don't do that. You don't try to get, you don't try to petition to get law enacted to get people to, take this vaccine, under threat of not being able to, go into public places or buy and sell, that has every inkling of the mark of the beast, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But to go back to our original point, I think as of right now, as of this very minute, I would say Bill Gates is one of the biggest enemies to freedom. But Bill Gates is more, obviously he's a large enemy to freedom, but I think he's more or less, he is representative of a bigger problem, being the elites, the people, the rich, the people at the top. It's not so much the fact that they're rich, but it's the fact that they're rich and influential. They are in positions of power, so whatever, Bill Gates, he built this huge empire. He's worth however many, whatever the fuck, billions of dollars.
Yeah.
But, so naturally, with money comes power. He has a lot of power, but he was not elected. He has power, but was not elected. He's a tyrant, is what he is.
Mm.
And just like every other, again, it's not the fact that they're rich.
I've never thought
of
it like that.
Yeah, it's not...
Hit that again.
Bill Gates, along with many other, of the elite, the rich, elite, they are powerful because of their money, but not because they were elected into positions of power. That makes them tyrants. Anyone who is, no matter how nice they may be, no matter how benevolent they are, if they were not elected into power...
Mm.
They are tyrants.
I like that a lot. The
only person that can be in power without being elected and not be a tyrant is God himself. Every Amazing. Human, if they are put in power without being elected, they are tyrants. And tyrants deserve more or less death in most cases. So what I was saying, Bill Gates is more or less indicative of a larger problem, that being the ability for rich people, the elite, to gain power and gain influence over, in very subtle ways, but over law, over politicians and stuff, they're able to gain this power without being elected. And that is probably one of, if not the biggest enemies of freedom, because anyone, you think about another example, like corporations and stuff. Yeah. They have a lot of power over us,
yeah.
and a lot of people don't even realize it. But corporations have a lot of power over us, and they were not elected. And now they were. Some people might argue, oh well, they were elected by people giving them business. But that might be true on a small scale, as in that mom and pop restaurant. We elected quote unquote elected that to be the dominating restaurant in our small town, because it has the best food. Okay, sure. But when it gets to the scale of things like Apple and Amazon and stuff,
yeah.
their pockets are so deep. We could boycott them for the next 100 years and they would be fine.
Yeah.
We have the people have no power against these large corporations. And again, we did not elect them into power, yet they have very much power over our everyday lives.
A big they one are, I like to point out is Google.
Yeah, Google yeah, exactly. Is ridiculous. Yeah, censoring search results yeah. and all that stuff. They are tyrants.
And, shadow banning and all that.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Insane. They're just as tyrannical as you imagine some government, some dictator who whatever. It's the same thing. It's just much more subtle. A lot of people don't realize it. Well, it's like, the CEOs, they worked hard. They built those businesses as businesses. It's like, yeah, okay, sure. But when those businesses are exacting control over your life in abstract ways, are they directly making laws? No, of course not. But they are, a lot of them are influencing, if not influencing policymakers directly, like with bribes. They're influencing policy by, like Hollywood does. They influence public opinion, among the masses of, very ignorant people. They can get them, through what's popular to vote in certain ways, vote in certain directions. That's why right now Republicans, we'd be lucky if Trump wins the next election. And when I say we, I'm a little bit more removed from American politics in that regard. But I say we as in the right wing. We'd be lucky if Trump won another election. And then after that, I will be very surprised if another Republican ever gets into office. And that's because we on the right have allowed the left, we play by the rules. The left does not. We're too nice. That's why I'm ashamed to consider myself a part of the American right wing, because the American right wing is full of weak pussies really. And, if you're...
So what you're saying here is the left wing is where all the real men are.
No. that's something else.
That's satire.
Yeah. I mean, even the weakest of the American right is still probably among the strongest of the left, we can come back to that later. But my point is, basically, there are many institutions, many entities that are enemies to our freedom that, we think of, the government, they're the enemies to freedom because they enact laws, blah, blah, blah. But there are many more enemies to freedom that are much more dangerous, in my opinion, than any tyrannical government, because they are subtle about it, and 99% of people are not aware that they are tyrannical. So I guess I haven't really gone into any examples, but I'll I guess sticking with the topic of the sort of the recurring theme, as you've told me about your past episodes, sugar. So let's say the Coca-Cola Corporation, or McDonald's or something, whatever, unhealthy foods in general. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, Coca-Cola either like owns McDonald's or is like the parent company, something like that. But whatever.
More than likely.
Yeah, it doesn't matter either way. The Coca-Cola Corporation and McDonald's own so many different food producers and stuff. And all of those, and companies, all of those produce, 99% unhealthy bullshit, basically. Mm. And that's what the average American is eating. Why? It's not because, these companies, we just like making sweets. It's not your family owned bakery down the street. Yeah. They make cupcakes because they like eating, good tasting food, and they want to share that. That's great. Hmm. When Coca-Cola does it, they don't do it because, we want everyone to enjoy the taste of Coke. No, they want money, and they want people to be unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because when people are unhealthy, they are pacified. When their brains are stimulated with sugar, they're happy. They're fat, dumb, and happy. They are fat, dumb, and happy. Right. They are pacified. And on top of that, too, it's the elite. And when I say the elite, I reference not only just the rich, influential, powerful people like, the Clintons or whatever, but everyone, the super rich. And again, the problem isn't simply that they're rich. It's that they're rich and powerful without being elected. Yeah. That is the problem. But, they're powerful because they're rich. That's the problem. Anyways. So the CEOs of these like large corporations and stuff, it's not not only do they not care about you, you know, the consumer, you know, because they're not worried about, you know, if they were a small company, they would have to be worried about whether or not they produce a good product. But now they own such a large part of the market share, they're too big to fail. They're not worried about whether or not they're putting out a good product or, you know, a healthy product or whatever. They know that people are going to keep buying their shit no matter what. But it's worse than that. Mm. They not only don't care about you or me or the listener or the listener's friends or anything. It's not only that they don't care, they hate us.
Yeah.
They hate us. And it sounds like a projection, like it sounds so tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, you know, to say, but it's not conspiracy theory. It is very much conspiracy fact is what it is. They don't just not care, they hate us. They want us pacified, because as long as we're pacified, we cannot hang them. You know, we will never take up arms against them. Take the porn industry. The government should very much, you know, porn is, you know, all the science indicates porn is a, you know, the government is supposed to protect us from all threats, foreign and domestic.
Yeah.
Porn is a, I mean, I guess there's porn made in other countries, so you can call it foreign too, but you know, it is a foreign and domestic threat to the well-being of the American people.
Yeah.
If the American government actually cared about us, it takes 5 minutes of Google search to see, damn, this porn is actually really bad for people. The effects are not as immediate as, you know, whatever, getting blown up by dynamite, but they're just as bad and suicidal.
It's such a new thing in the culture.
Right.
It's like internet porn and this easy access is so new that no one can see the long-term effects of this yet.
Well, they're beginning to.
It's been around just enough for us to start to see that.
That's something that the listener, if they're interested, I very much encourage them to look up the negative effects of porn. It's very terrible for everybody that watches it, but especially young men.
Yeah.
But so that leads me to what I was saying. If the government actually cared about the strength and the health of its population, they would ban porn.
Mm.
But they don't. Is it because they don't care? Oh, well, what if people want to watch porn? They can't. No, it's not just because they don't care. They hate us. They want us pacified. They want us having weak relationships. You know, a strong relationship between a man and his wife will likely lead to a strong relationship between the parents and their kids.
Yeah.
And when you have a strong family, a strong family is, you know, just like a strong corporation or a strong government is an enemy to freedom, a strong family is an enemy to tyranny.
Agreed, absolutely.
Yeah, and
a strong nuclear family is
right, exactly,
vital.
Right, and it is an enemy to tyranny, and the government knows, you know, the government, the elites, everybody, they know that.
Yeah.
And they hate us, they want us pacified.
It's almost like
because they know that if young men are watching porn all the time, they're not going to form good relationships with women. They're not going to have healthy families. They're not going to have a healthy relationship dynamic. They're going to be weak families of cum brains who are enslaved to porn.
Oh,
they think,
man.
Oh, well, it's, you know, oh, I can do whatever I want. I can watch porn. No, you are a slave to your desires. You are a slave to porn, bar none. You know,
yes.
And there's no refuting that. Anyways, and when you're busy jerking off, the government is busy writing up laws that, you know, that encroach upon your rights.
Yep.
You know, they want that. That's why porn hasn't been banned. That's why high fructose corn syrup hasn't been banned. It's the government does not only not care, they hate us.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'll shut up for a minute to let you talk. I know you're kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just going to hit on that. That's exactly why that, like, traditional values are being repressed so heavily and being kind of targeted by not only like the government, but by the government and media,
right?
And just kind of the, you can just have the rest of that.
Okay,
just tear that shit up.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Oh, you're just gonna pour that in with the protein shake.
Yeah.
For everyone listening, we're drinking some milk right now.
Milk is the thinking man's drink.
Yes, sir, it is. But what I was saying, traditional values such as just marriage and the nuclear family and, you know, all that stuff, you know, whatever you think of when I say traditional values and all that, it's being targeted by the media and by government and everything, really.
Right.
And that's why...
Large corporations.
Yeah, large corporations is the big one.
Right.
The big one.
I'd say media is probably the biggest, but yeah. You know, because arguably media is more influential than government. But
yeah,
yeah, no, what you're saying is exactly right. They know that this, you know, all of the pillars that make up the philosophical foundations of the right wing, i.e. strong family dynamics, self-reliance, all of those, you know, and many others that I could get into, but all of those things are antithetical to what the elite want. The elite want us to be, think of it like this. I think it was Stefan Molyneux who put it into words. I don't know if he was referencing like The Animal Farm by, you know, or 1984 by George Orwell or whatever, but the way I heard it described was, if you think of it like, think of it like us as livestock, like, you know, whatever, let's say horses.
Yeah.
If you own a bunch of horses, you know, you want them to be strong, you know, because you want to, whatever, you want to ride them and then you want them to be fast, or you want to sell them and get good money out of them, yeah, you know, whatever. So you don't keep that horse in a, you know, in a cage all its life and feed it, you know, whatever bullshit, you know, you know, because it, you don't keep it in a cage because you want it to be strong, you want it to be fast, you know, whatever, you want it to get you a good price, you know, yeah, whatever, or you want it to, whatever. So maybe a horse was a good example. Maybe we could say a cow, you know, so let's say a cow, you don't keep it in a cage, you know, and feed it, you know, whatever bullshit. I don't know what the fuck they feed cows other than grass, but you know, whatever, you don't feed it
soy,
right? Yeah. You don't feed it that because you want it to be, you know, you want it to be healthy and you want it to get you a good, you know, a good price. Basically, you know, you want it to be you want it to be a cash cow, you know, you want the milk to sell, you want, and then later you want the meat to sell, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So comparing that to people, if you know, if you take a cow and you stick it in a cage, it's not going to be healthy. It's not going to produce a lot of milk. It's not going to produce good meat. You're not going to get much money out of it. That's the key thing. You're not going to get much money out of it. Now, you put it in a out in a pasture. It can walk around. It can graze. It can eat, you know, grass, you know, which it's supposed to eat. Then it can be, you know, it'll fetch a much better price, you know, at the auction, you know, the proverbial auction. It'll fetch a much better price because you allowed it. Now, you still kept it. This is the thing. You kept it in a fence, but you didn't keep it in a cage. Mm. You know, you gave it a little bit of freedom, you know, to walk around and do whatever, you know, but it's still stuck in that fence. It's never going to get out of that fence. So when you compare that to people, we are given the illusion of liberty by the ability to vote, even though, especially now, maybe it made a difference back in the day, but now, if you're on the right wing, voting is worthless. It makes absolutely no difference. It doesn't help if you're on the right. Now you should still vote right. But let's face it, after this next election, you know, we'll be lucky if Trump gets elected. But after that, voting for the right wing in America will become worthless.
Yeah, I could not agree more.
Yeah, because we've allowed the left to take control over media. But anyway, so as that pertains to the, you know, the cow example, so the government knows that they can't just keep us in cages. They can't just keep us, you know, whatever, in little, you know, pods where we whatever, because they're not going to get any tax money out of us. You know, if they keep us enslaved like they want to, you know, but if they keep us enslaved in that they keep us chained up, they keep us in a cage, well, they know two things. They know that, one, we're not going to be able to produce as much tax revenue for them. We're not going to be able to produce as much labor for them.
Yeah.
Less money for them. And that's a good way for a slave uprising to happen, which they don't want. So they give us a little bit. They give us a little bit of freedom. They give us just enough to where we think we're truly free, but not so much that we are truly free. As in, they give us just enough, you know, they let us have our, you know, like as it sits right now, they let us have some guns, not all the guns that we should be able to have, but they let us have some guns. They let us vote. They let us, for the most part, you know, peaceably assemble. And that's good and all, but they know that those things are harmless to them. And here's why, because those things just by themselves are not harmless. You know, they're very much antithetical to tyranny, but the reason why they're harmless to the elite, you know, as of today, is because they know that because of the bad things that they have employed, like porn, like terrible diets, infatuating every aspect of life, mm-hmm. and, you know, in media, they know that, okay, well, these people, you know, we've given them a little bit of space. We're not keeping them in a cage. We're just keeping them in a fenced-in yard. We're giving them a little bit, you know, enough to run around in and think they're free. You know, they look out and they don't, you know, they... they can see a few feet past their face, basically. You know, they don't see the cage that's around them. All they see is, you know, a fence off in the distance. Oh, well, I'm not worried about it. They are under the illusion of being free when they're not. Mm. So, but you know, giving them enough freedom to, you know, whatever, start businesses and do all this, you know, that gives them enough to, well, all my needs are met. I'm making good money. My family is happy. We're making good money. Well, what more could I want? You know, we're good. The government is getting their tax money. Everybody's happy. Well, whenever that fence, you know, gets a little, whenever the yard gets, you know, whenever the grass has all been grazed, you know, there's too many cows, you know, whenever the grass has all been grazed, whenever there's too many cows in one place, you know, and the fence get, you know, the area gets a little tight and people want to start stepping over that fence. Well, now the government's like, hey, you know, the elite, you know, they have a problem. They're like, hey, you know, you can't step outside that fence. You know, we won't put you in a cage yet, but we're going to keep you inside this fence. And, you know, you better not step outside this or else you're dead.
What is beyond the fence?
The grass is greener on the other side.
As it always is, right?
Right. But yeah, you know, so they give us just enough for us to think that we're free, like voting. That's the biggest example. It gives the illusion of freedom without giving us any real freedom, without giving us any real choice, because they know that despite them giving us a little, you know, freedom here and there with, okay, we're allowed to start businesses, we're allowed to own certain guns, we're allowed to vote, whatever. They're like, okay, we'll give you that, but behind our backs, they're influencing the media, they're influencing, I mean, every other aspect of our lives. They are influencing that so that they can still remain in power while keeping us under the illusion that we're free, basically.
Yeah.
I realize that, like, I kept trying to explain that same point in, like, 50 different ways. I kept tripping over my words, but hopefully you can maybe edit out, like, that past 10 minutes, except for that past, like, 30 seconds. That you can condense it down to that.
I'm not going to edit. I think it works out.
I kept, like, speaking in circles. Yeah. I wasn't trying to, but I was just having trouble formulating my thoughts. But
so at the end of the day, on a macro level,
yeah,
what would you classify as being the primary enemies of freedom?
I guess big money corporations, people that are elected, people that are put in power by virtue of their money, not by virtue of, you know, being elected, basically.
Yeah.
I would say that's one of the biggest things. And then a weak populace, as in the men, a lot of the problems that plague, you know, like the social sphere in the West are, you know, and I think if any feminists listen to this, they're gonna cheer me on for the next like 10 seconds, and then they're gonna hate me the next like 10 seconds after that. The problems that plague the world today are men's fault. Men are too weak. The majority of men are not. You know, I mean, and really this, you know, there is science supporting this. Men today have less testosterone than men even.
It's significant.
You're right. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Men today are not men anymore. We are weaker. You know, weak men are the root of society's problems. I mean, I could spend another 10 hours, you know, telling you why that's the case. But basically, yeah, weak men are the root of almost all the world's problems. Now, I'm sure, you know, like I said, people who might be listening who might already think that, you know, they might be thinking, oh, well, yeah, men are the root of all evil because men are, you know, pigs, rapists, you know, we're blah, blah, blah,
patriarchy. The toxic masculinity. Right, oh, no.
Right, exactly. That's probably what they're thinking right now. But now I'm about to flip the script on them because... it's because we're not masculine enough.
Mm.
Men, you know, I don't believe in toxic masculinity, or rather, it's hard to explain, but basically, men today are nowhere near masculine enough. And not only that, you're seen as weird when you act masculine. Mm-hmm. You are shouted down by other weak men, you know, by slimy, weak bastards of men.
I love it.
You are shouted down by them and by women women have more or less taken on, in a lot of ways, the roles of men in ways that they were just never designed to. You know, women are not, you know, like, take the issue of single motherhood. Women are not men, and it's not their fault. It's just the way, you know, whether you believe, you know, no matter what you believe, you know, how we got here, whether it be God or evolution or whatever. You know, I believe in both. But anyways, whether you believe in either one, the point is women are not designed to be single mothers. And, you know, they're not designed to raise kids and work. You know, they can, because we have a culture of, you know, waste. You know, we can, you know, a woman can be employed and, you know, get along relatively okay. But if she wants to have kids, especially without a father figure, and, you know, without a present father figure, she'll go insane if she tries to raise kids while working. Women mm-hmm. are not meant to handle, and men really are not meant to either, but we can multitask in that regard better. You know, men can better juggle raising kids and going to work than women can, but both of those are terrible. You need both parents. Mm-hmm. Where men have weaknesses, women have strengths. Where men have strengths, women have weaknesses. That's not in any way sexist or patriarchal or whatever. It's the truth is what it is. Yeah. And the science is all there. I encourage anyone who doesn't believe to listen, you know, to look that up. But anyways, that with all that being said, like I said, it's because men are not masculine enough that 99% of the problems in the world exist.
I agree entirely.
If men and you know, hopefully maybe with this podcast, you know, maybe you're helping to change that even on a small level.
I hope so.
But yeah, men are, like I said, and then take, so this is something that has irked me for a while. I guess it's sort of related to freedom, but it's important, needs to be said. Young boys are not meant to sit in one place for 8 hours a day and adhere to strict dumbass schedules and be taught by women. So, you know, why do you think, I think it's like a true, like 95 or something, an overwhelming majority of percentage of people diagnosed with ADHD are boys.
Yep.
Is that because 95% of boys have ADHD? No. It's because dumbass doctors, I won't say that part. But anyways, dumbass doctors, they think that young boys not wanting to sit in some boring fucking classroom for 8 hours a day, they can't fathom that because you know, young girls can. You know, they are, you know, relatively content to sit in one place for however many, you know, however long. They'll sit there, quiet, happy, whatever. Boys cannot do that. So what they label as ADHD, you know, they say to this young kid who's perfectly normal, he just wants to go out and play like young kids do, especially young male kids do, they're told that they're mentally ill. I mean, that is it's child abuse, in my opinion. You know, and then giving them these drugs, that these mind altering drugs, to try to fix them when there's nothing wrong with them to begin with. It's insane is what it is. But anyways, I suppose I've
yeah, we've gone a little bit off the rails here.
Yeah, pontificated about that.
So
we're enough.
So actually, I have a whole episode coming up dedicated to just masculinity and, I guess, manliness and whatnot and all that. And we will definitely hit more on that during that episode. Also, for anyone listening that is a beta male or a soy boy or whatever you want to call it,
Nut the fuck up.
Yeah. If you want some help, you come hang out with us for a day and we will get your damn T levels out the fucking roof, buddy. Tell you what. Okay, so we're going to move on from the enemies of thought two. So thought number three. What can we do to preserve freedom on an individual level? Let's not say macro level. Individual.
Right.
And I've got some ideas here. So freedom on the individual level. We've already spoken on what the enemies are on an individual level. That would be stuff like sugar, porn, video games, excessive carbohydrates, whatever you'd want to
the Marvel say. Cinematic Universe.
Oh. Oh shit, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. But so there's lots of enemies of individual freedom. Really just things that you get obsessed with that don't help you, that don't progress you, don't push you in life, are what I would say are enemies of individual freedom. How you can preserve your individual freedom would be to reject
What?
I'm thinking of that. Reject.
Oh, reject modernity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tradition. Yeah, so reject your... reject the chains and the shackles that are trying to hold you down to your addictions, I'd say. Such as everything I just spoke about. I know I always condemn porn and sugar, but I mean, it's true. I will never stop condemning porn and sugar. Ever. But really, to preserve your freedom with that, you need to quit sugar, quit porn, start working out, stop being sedentary, get off the couch, go advance your career. If you're working a dead-end job, go figure out what you're going to do instead. Maybe go to trade school, maybe go back to college.
Learn history.
Learn history, join the military, do something honorable, do something good. Advance your career, advance your opportunities, and that's the whole point of this
podcast. Hang around with high testosterone men as well.
Yes, hang around men that are
real men.
Hang around real men. And here's something I learned about in some podcast or book. I forgot what it was. It was really applying to martial arts, which I will definitely have a podcast coming soon about martial arts. But it was relating to martial arts, saying that you always need to train with three different people. Mm. You need to train with somebody that's way better than you to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You need to train with somebody that is at your equal level to not only teach them what you learned, but to also learn from them. And you need to train with somebody that you're better than to teach to.
Mm.
And yeah. I really like that, and that can apply to just about damn near anything. Not just martial arts or not just working out, but that if you really boil that down, that's a good one to learn, or that's a good one to apply to preserving your freedom. You need to have friends. You need to, expand on that, I should say.
Yeah.
You need to have good friends that are like-minded, and not just like-minded in a bad way. Not like if all you do is sit at home and watch anime and jerk off and stay up until 5 in the morning, then you don't need to have friends that encourage that kind of shit. You need to have friends that are like, hey man, let's go work out. Hey man, let's go on a run. Let's go...
like-minded about the right thing.
Yes, you need...
Not an echo chamber of the wrong things.
Agreed, right. Agreed. You need to find friends. And you're probably asking, oh, how do I find friends?
We can save that for another episode, because there's a lot to be said about
that. Yeah, there is a lot to be said about that. So, tell you what, yeah, we'll save that for another episode. We'll have a whole episode. Hell, I think I have it written. I think one of the branches of my spiritual pillar includes friends. Oh, yeah, friends. Perfect. Well, so, we will make a whole episode about friends, who to hang around, and whatnot. Because we're starting to go off on a tangent here, and we have pretty strictly agreed to not go on tangents, because if we do that, this will be an 18-hour-long podcast.
And we'll be talking to ourselves.
Oh, yes. So, what do we do to preserve individual freedom? That's pretty simple. Avoid things that are going to inhibit you. Quit sugar, quit porn, stop playing video games all the time, get a hold of life, and...
Things that detract from your discipline and your testosterone levels. Testosterone for males, it is... This sounds very pseudosciencey, and you know, to say, but honestly, testosterone is the vitality by which males are able that every other facet of male life is built upon. And
agreed.
That if you're low in testosterone, you're gonna suck shit at everything else.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And become
a Christian, or if you really hate Christianity that much. Become something other than atheistic.
Agreed.
Adopt any philosophy, any religion, whatever.
Yeah, find God. Find God and get saved.
Right.
Strongly recommend it. But I guess you could say, and to sum it up and to also have a kind of motif here, to preserve your individual freedom, you need to take life by the horns. Ha 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 ha. Okay, anyways. I'm going to let you speak pretty predominantly on how to preserve freedom on a macro level. You're way more knowledgeable than me in that. I would say this is your golden moment of this entire podcast, Mr. Armorist.
Yeah.
And I'll let you go. So how do we preserve freedom on a macro nationwide scale here?
Well, I guess it's hard to even choose a place to start because there's so many. It's a big country with a lot of people and a lot of resources at our disposal. Mm. But I think in the future, you know, especially, you know, if you're listening to this and you're even remotely a part of the right wing, you've probably come to realize that, like I mentioned before, voting for the right wing has become more or less it is a lost cause at this point. There is virtually no reason. Maybe in the 2020 election, all right, vote right, and we might get lucky, get another 4 years. But after this, because again, as I mentioned before, because the left has played, you know, they haven't played by the rules. They abused our good graces, and our not so good graces, i.e., the weak men of the right and the left. But you know, I'm mostly ashamed of the weak men of the right because they're the ones that are supposed to be strong but are not. But anyways, because they have abused our good graces in one way or another, they have pretty much guaranteed that they'll win every other election. I mean, every coming election. And because the left is selling something that appeals to much more people than the right. You know, the right is selling self-sufficiency. Yep. and personal responsibility. You know, responsibility for safety, for providing for yourself, for everything. Whereas the left is selling free shit, basically, which is much more appealing.
Who doesn't love some free shit?
Right. It's much more appealing to the, you know, to the average person. And that's why they're winning the political game. And we on the right, we can't compete. The only way we can compete is by direct action, by praxis, rather than, you know, just, you know, standing on our stools and pontificating to people. No matter how right we may be, it doesn't matter, because no matter what we say, the left, you know, the elite and everything, you know, the elite and the left more or less goes hand in hand, but whatever the case, whatever you want to call them, they hate us. And no matter what we say, they are always going to be against us. No matter how much we try to appease them, they're always going to want what's worse for us. They're going to want us to shut up, to sit down, and to let them have their way with the entire country, with the entire world, and every generation, every successive generation from now to the end of time. And you know, and it's been starting before, you know, this has been going on for many, many years, but we're seeing it all sort of come to a head, I think. And so that's to get back to what I was saying. I definitely think there's going to be some political violence in the future, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10, 20 years. Sooner the better, though. It needs to it should have happened about 110 years ago. Or, all right, if you want to be really nice, 70 years ago. But it should have happened already. But because everyone has been so comfortable and so safe, we haven't worried about it. We haven't worried about the fact that our freedoms are being slowly eroded away day by day. Now, I think a lot of young people, luckily, are starting to realize, hey, this government that hates us is, they're getting pretty ballsy with wanting to take our rights away, and we're not going to stand for it. At least, you know, at least I hope that's what's happening. It seems like that's happening, but, you know, I could be wrong. But whatever the case, to preserve freedom on a large scale, on a, you know, on a nationwide scale, you have to first conquer yourself, you know, especially as a young male, but, you know, whether you're male, female, whatever, and regardless of age, but especially as a young male, you need to conquer yourself. And again, that's like I was talking about before, you know, the individual microcosm, you know, it represents the whole state, you know, the whole world, really. But anyways, so first you need to conquer yourself. Do that first. Then conquer your friends. Get your friends to conquer themselves. You know, get a group of people on board who are, you know, a group of people, you know, a tight-knit group of people who share the same, you know, the same beliefs as you and are ready to have your back and are ready to fight if need be, you know, physically fight for their freedoms. If they, you know, if they are passionate about them, then they need to be ready to fight for them, because you can't enjoy liberty without fighting for it. As in, you know, like right now, because none of us, you know, not us, not our parents, not our grandparents, fought for liberty. You know, I mean, we fought other countries, but we did not fight our own government like we should have for liberty. We didn't remind them that, we did not remind the government that they need to be afraid of us. Because we didn't fight for our liberties, we are losing our liberties. So the best thing you can do, conquer yourself, get your friends to conquer themselves, and then if you are, depending on your age, and depending on when this all comes to a boiling point, but if you can, if you think you'd have time, raise, have a strong family, find a good woman, you know, and I mean, and that's hard enough. You could dedicate the entire scores of episodes to that, but you know, find yourself a good woman, build a good, strong relationship with her, marry her, then have a bunch of kids, as many as you want, as many as you can, you know, afford, whatever. Raise them to be victors, not victims. Especially, agreed. Especially the young, especially the boys. You know, obviously you want your daughters to be strong as well. That's very, very important. Don't get me wrong, but young men are what changes the world. You know, young men are the winds that blow that change. You know, we are the winds of change. You know, and that's why this podcast is for the most part targeted toward young men. Yes. Me to a lesser degree, because I'm not here as often, but you know, we're trying to save the world one person at a time by whoever may be listening to this podcast, if anybody. So have children, you know, and raise them to be, you know, morally conscious, but also politically conscious. You know, don't let them become sheep. Don't let them become enslaved to sugar and porn and all that. You know, imbue in them the things that you wish that you could teach yourself. You know, your 14, 15-year-old self. Imbue that into them from the time that they you know, learn to walk, you know, and raise them like that, and they'll grow up to be victors and not victims. They will be strong. You know, if you don't raise them very strong, they're going to be trying. And that's something I wish my parents did better. You know, my parents raised me raised respectful and everything, but I don't think they raised strong as I could have been. Grace of God, I became aware of these things. I've been politics and all this stuff for 21 years old, over a decade, I've been talking about the past three years or so. But it is very important that you conquer yourself, get your friends to conquer themselves, and have big, strong families, quite literally. Then, from there, that's the biggest, easiest thing you can do. Now, as time goes on, like I said, I think there's going to be some political violence, if not a lot of political violence in the future. Everyone likes to poo-poo the plights of young men nowadays, but, when men lament the problems that plague society, you know, everyone's so like, oh, you're just an incel, or oh, you're just, you know, you name it, alt-right trash, whatever the fuck they want to say. They should not make fun of you. They should be afraid, because you have a large group of young fighting-age males who are enraged at the current state of that, the status quo. That's not something to be laughed at. That's something to be feared.
Very.
And history has shown us that time and time again. Anyways, part of conquering yourself, like I mentioned, you need to learn you need to learn first why you would fight. Again, learn politics, learn philosophy, learn theology, learn history, learn why you cannot stand for one more second to be stepped on like you're being right now by every Western government, including America's. First, you need to learn what's wrong, and then you need to act on it. Now, that is a very tall order, in that, you know, a lot of things that you might do to act on to preserve your liberty are illegal. You know, right now they are illegal, but it is your duty, I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said, it is your duty to ignore unjust laws. He didn't word it like that, but that was effectively what he was saying. But anyways, it's your duty to ignore unjust laws, and it's your duty to fight back against those that would impose such laws upon you. And, you know, and of course, that sounds like, oh, well, how the hell am I supposed to do that? You know, how am I supposed to, in any way, effectively fight back? Well, all it takes right now, all it takes is one person. If one person started firing at, whether it be at the police that try to red flag them, or whether it be at politicians or whatever, I think all it would take is one person and everyone else would follow suit. Mm. We need that one. Everyone wants to reap the benefits of a hero's actions, but nobody wants to be the hero.
Yep.
And I think that's something, you know, like the only thing stopping me from doing it myself is that I want to have a family. You know, other than that, you know, if I was diagnosed with cancer, I would dedicate the rest of my life to revolution, basically. Because, you know, you can think, oh, well, my life is so good right now. You know, everything's okay. You know, why would I ever want to revolt? Well, it might be okay now. Personally, I don't think it is, but you might consider it to be okay now. But what about your kids? What about their kids? What about their kids? If you don't act to preserve your liberties now, they're going to keep being eroded as they've been for the past however long you want to say. It just depends on what scale you're talking. But if you don't act to preserve them now, they're going to get eroded into nothingness as time goes on. So your kids and their kids, you know, grandkids and all that, they're going to grow up in a world with significantly less freedoms than you did. So you might think everything is okay now, but I can promise you it is not. The government, you know, you can look at situations like the Waco siege and Ruby Ridge. The government is not afraid to kill you for doing effectively nothing wrong. So you need to be ready, or at least, you know, willing. If you can't be ready, being ready costs money. Yeah, and I understand that that's hard, but you need to be at least willing to yeah. fight back. Because the thing is, right now, you know, like I said, it seems like such a tall order because almost nobody is ready. It's such a small percentage of the population that is ready, you know, and willing.
How do you get ready?
Well, that could be a whole episode by itself.
Yeah, but I have a whole episode lined up about preparedness and martial arts and weapons training and
whatnot. Well, all that, you know, obviously weapons training and tactical training would be probably one of the biggest things, but also self-sufficiency training. As in, you might have to live the rest of your life on the run from the government, but you can find some land that you can live off of. Well, you'll be just fine. But again, people are not prepared to do that. You know, the revolutionary force, you know, the American militia that founded this country, they were not afraid to do that. Or, well, rather, they were afraid, but they did it anyways. They were courageous. They were very much afraid because they knew that they had a lot to lose. They had their families, their businesses, their lives to lose, but they fought anyways. They fought against the largest military force on the planet, and they won. You know, so right now, again, the largest military force on the planet is the American military. But keep in mind,
this thing you're about to say. About, I know where you're going.
About 5% of the American population identifies as alt-right. So let's say of that 5%, even 1% of them, of the population, is ready and willing to fight. You know, to stage it. You know, to stage a revolution against the American military. So without even talking about the fact that the American military would be neutered fighting on its own home front, we'll you know, that can be a topic for another time. But if only 1% of the population formed a fighting force to fight the American government, basically, that would be the largest standing military on the planet. 1% of 340 million people, 3.4 million people, that would be the largest standing military on the planet, and we would more than be able to outwit and outsmart and outperform the American military because they would be neutered, because they couldn't use the American military would not be able to employ its full might against its own citizens. It just wouldn't work. There's millions of logistical problems with that, and it would be political suicide. If you're a dictator, you want to rule over people. You don't want to rule over a pile of ashes, because then you have nothing. So they won't nuke us. They won't carpet bomb us. You know, that's all. Anyone who tells you otherwise either knows nothing or is a government psy operative, is what they are.
Plus, you got to think,
I don't think the entire military. I think there's a.
Oh, I think many would defect. I think they wouldn't fire.
Very
on
large
civilians.
Chunk of the military would defect and, and not follow those orders.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another. You know, that's another sort of straw in that hat. But anyways, so there's that. But then also, you know, there are many historical examples of small forces overcoming very large forces. You know, small revolutionary forces overcoming very large forces. And so take, for example, in Weimar Germany, only about 3% of that population identified as what would later be called the Nazis. And as, you know, as anyone with any bit of historical knowledge knows, the Nazi Party took over the entire country of Germany, all the production, everything. You know, they had the entire country in their pocket, and that was only 3% of the population. So, you know, you're talking, when you're talking on much larger numbers, you know, 3% of the American population is much bigger than 3% of what Weimar Germany's was. So when you're talking much bigger numbers, it really becomes a little bit less unfathomable that perhaps a revolution is possible. And then, you know, again, like I mentioned before, just the first American Revolution, you know, against the British, we had the largest military force on the planet to fight against. And we won with outdated farming equipment and, you know, old rusty muskets. And we won. And, it, I mean, and there's hundreds of other, you know, David and Goliath type stories, you know. So, you know, so when you start to put all these things together, you realize that perhaps revolution is not as impossible as it seems. It emboldens you a bit. And I hope that that, I hope to anyone listening that it does embolden you and empower you to start thinking about this sort of thing and start trying to prepare, because I can tell you, the longer you wait, the harder it is going to be to prepare, because gun laws are going to be eroded. There are over 23,000 different regulations on guns as we speak. It might be more than that now, because I saw that figure a long time ago. There's only going to be more and more as time goes on until we start hanging ATF agents and, you know, Democrat politicians. Until we start making examples of them, it's going to be more and more and more. So there's a lot of ways that you can get ready, but I would say the biggest thing is first learn history, you know, learn what mistakes not to repeat, learn philosophy, learn theology, you know, and learn just politics in general. Learn psychology, learn what makes people tick. And once you've learned all that, then start learning about how you can actually prepare yourself, i.e. tactical knowledge, living, you know, knowledge of living off the land, and mentally gaining the mental fortitude to fight, basically. Realize that you're going to have to give up a lot. You're going to have to potentially live the rest of your life on the run. You might die in battle. You might, you know, whatever. There are a number of bad things that can happen, but you have to learn that it's worth it, basically. And if you don't, and I guess this is sort of, I've been rambling for quite a while, so I'll close with this. If you don't, history will not just not remember you. You'll be lucky if history doesn't remember you. You will be remembered as someone who sat around all day jerking off and you know, whatever, watching Harry Potter movies, or I don't know what the fuck people do nowadays, but you know, whatever bullshit, you know, or watching, oh, you know, man, MCU movies. You, like I said, you'll be lucky if you don't get remembered, but in reality, you'll be remembered as some neoliberal who sat around, jerked off all day, watched MCU, and did absolutely nothing with their lives, didn't have kids, didn't do anything, and was not a pillar of their community. But if you start acting and if you start preparing, the day might come when you might have to defend your family, your community, and you might not be remembered by history either, but you sure as shit won't be remembered as someone who just went with the status quo and stood by while your country died and while your all your successive generations of kids that you in all reality probably didn't have, but if you did, all of them, you sat by and let their freedoms be eroded away, and you know, and that's shameful, in my opinion. And, you know, you didn't self-actualize into a strong man. You remained a weak man. And it's, you know, that's disgraceful and it's sinful. And, I guess I should stop there, you know, insulting the listeners,
I think everything you just spoke on and why it's important to be prepared and why it's not just important, but it's necessary to understand your motives and understand your why and have your reasoning why of why you should be prepared for revolution and why you should be prepared for, you know, I suppose, watering the tree of liberty
right.
with the blood of tyrants. You got to be ready for that. You got to be ready to step up to the plate and play that game if it comes down to it, because that's, I think morally that is what is best. And if you look into the history, like our minister was saying, if you look into the history of it and the philosophy and psychology, it's what makes the most sense. It's what is most...
God gives you the yes. gift. He gives you... You know, no institution, no government, no man has ever given you your liberties. You were born with them. No one gave them to you. Only God gave them to you. You were born with all your liberties. It was man who took them away.
Agreed.
And you know, by taking those liberties and not, you know, and allowing them to be stepped on and not defending them, you are wasting the gift, the second most precious gift other than life. You are wasting that gift, and it, and personally, I think it's sinful. You know, you're wasting that gift that God gave you, and you're effectively saying that it's worthless, you know, and that is. I believe not only an affront to mankind, but an affront to God Himself. So, if you're religious, that should hopefully get you thinking. And if you're irreligious, well, you'll come around eventually if you listen long
agreed,
enough.
Agreed. So, even though that right there is a great place to close at, I'm gonna hit some. Well, that thought. Okay, thought number four is about historical examples of freedom.
Yeah.
And thought number five is why freedom is important for self-development. I think we've pretty much already hit thought number five. We have essentially already covered it.
Yeah, more or less.
We will still say, if, you know, say
breaking your basically breaking your domestication and, you know, being aware of all those things is it's probably the biggest factor in figuring out why freedom is important to self-development. Mm. Because when you're aware of your surroundings and when you're aware, you know, that something needs to be done, when you follow that path, you will self-actualize into a stronger man, if you know. So
I agree. So let's hit a quick thought four. This is already at about an hour and 15 minutes in, which is awesome.
I'll be surprised if anyone listens to this all the way through, because I rambled for quite a while.
Who knows? We'll see. It was all good stuff, though. It was all some great stuff. So thought number four, we'll wrap up with a brief little thing here.
Hmm.
So give me one or two, however many historical examples you can think of freedom being stripped away from the people and what that looks like.
Well, so I guess my favorite example is the first American Revolution. You know, like I just, you know, talked about a few minutes ago, we were very much, you know, the American people were being stepped on by the British Empire. You know, they had no respect for our well-being. You know, we were just a tax colony, you know, for them. We were a cash cow for the British Empire. And after the founding fathers, you know, after they decided, hey, this is not, you know, this is not how any group of men or, you know, group of man, you know, mankind is supposed to live, they decided, hey, it's time to, you know, it's time to stop what we're doing, stop with our successful businesses and all that, and fight back. You know, it was not, they knew that it would not be an easy task, you know, and a lot of them had rich friends and stuff who were, you know, content, you know, because they were making money, they had relatively safe lives, they were perfectly content to stay part, you know, to stay loyal to the British Empire. It was, I want to say James Madison who said this, but I could be wrong. I'm trying to remember how the quote went exactly, because I could get it across in my own terms, but it's more powerful.
Let's paraphrase.
Well, it's more powerful, and all right, whatever. Basically, he said that, you know, for the people who are, you know, making money, you know, whatever, who are perfectly content to stay under oppressive situations, you know, as long as their, you know, basic needs are met. He said, "May your chains rest lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that you were ever our countrymen." Meaning that, you know, if you are willing to be enslaved, you know, but, oh, well, you know, my needs are met, I'm relatively comfortable, you know, my family's fed, you know, and you're not willing to fight,
well, okay, so be it. But know that you're going to be, that you are and will forever be enslaved, and you are not representative of an American. You do not possess the American spirit. You don't have the revolutionary spirit that's necessary for preserving freedom, as a lot of people don't have today. I got off topic there, but basically, my favorite historical example of freedom being stripped away and, you know, people preserving it is the American Revolution. The British saw America as basically a cash cow, you know, tax colony. They had no regard for our freedom, you know, or really our safety either. And the founding fathers realized that this was a problem, that it was no way for man to live. And they said, okay, it's time to fight. They tried to be peaceful at first. They tried to get representation in Parliament. It didn't work. And so they said, okay, voting, you know, being peaceful isn't working. So now we need to get a little bit more direct in our political activism. And they started fighting. And they won against the largest military force on the planet. Same with, I think it was the Second Punic War. The Carthaginians, they were... more, it was a very similar story. The Roman Empire, you know, Carthage was a colony of Rome that got to be so big that Carthage had its own colonies. It became a very big, very wealthy, powerful colony of Rome. But because they were effectively slaves to the Roman Empire, they decided to wage war against Rome for their independence, and they kicked Rome's ass in a lot of ways. So the Battle of Cannae, there were 72, if my numbers are correct, if my memory serves, 72,000 Roman soldiers died over the period of about 2 hours.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which was like an entire legion. And that was inflicted by, you know, by what was, you know, what would be the equivalent of a much smaller, you know, force. Like it was that time's equivalent of like an American Revolution. You know, you have a small tax colony, of undertrained, the Carthaginians were not very much involved in conquest like the Romans were, but, you know, they were a significantly smaller force with significantly less training, and they blew Rome the fuck out multiple times. I'm thinking of so many different revolutions in history, you know, I can't even choose which one to, you know, to talk about, but, the point is there were, oh, okay. So here's one more. So take the Russian serfs who, before Russia became a proper, not empire, but a proper monarchy, like it was, there were other, I guess you couldn't really call them dictators, but basically dictators that they had for about 800 years, these Russian serfs who were, you know, basically they were effectively slaves. It was the situation, the political, situation did not change for about 800 years. And after, I don't know why it took so long, but after 800 years, those serfs rose up with their, you know, basic farm tools, and they staged a complete, you know, what was if more or less a revolution, and eventually instituted the Russian monarchy, which we saw ending with Tsar Nicholas II. Just another example of how, you know, many cases throughout history have shown that a small, you know, an albeit small force with significantly less, you know, firepower, so to speak, can effectively wage war against a much larger and much better equipped and much better trained foe and win. You know, you can argue as to the, you know, different reasons and stuff, but the point is you can't be afraid to act because, oh, well, we don't have the numbers, or, oh, we don't have drones or stealth bombers or, you know, whatever, like the government, you know, like the government has, because ultimately it doesn't matter. You know, what, again, I can go into those reasons for hours on end, but the point is, it doesn't matter. As long as you're willing to fight, and as long as you're not willing to be stepped on, and as long as you're conscious of the fact that they're going to come after you and they're going to try to step on you and your family and everyone you know, as long as you're conscious of that and you're not willing to lay down for it, then you will be an enemy of the state, but you will be a friend to freedom, And I think that's one of the most important things you can be, especially if you're a young man, you know, listening to this. You know, if you are a young American man, you know, but really a young man at all, regardless of where you may be, if you're not willing to be a proponent of liberty, if you're willing to enable, you know, or if you're just apathetic towards, you know, the evils that the government commits, you are equally as guilty of that evil. You know, even if you're not the ones writing the laws, you know, or, you know, enforcing those laws, if you're not willing to fight against them, then you are enabling, and that makes you, in my eyes, equally as guilty as the person who wrote the laws, you know, or whatever. So I guess I've pontificated about that for long enough now.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I think we're just about done here. Any closing thoughts? Anything else you got? We have hit, just to refresh the memory here, we've hit what is freedom, what are the enemies of freedom, what can we do to preserve freedom, what are some historical examples, and lastly, we have why is freedom important for self-development. That's pretty self-explanatory after hearing this hour and a half of dialogue right here, so I don't think we really need to go into why it's important for self-development. You guys, anyone listening, can understand why valuing freedom, valuing liberty, and putting that on a high place or in your morality, and putting that in a high place in your personality, is incredibly vital, incredibly important, and necessary for self-development and to really kind of cultivate your mind to grow. You cannot grow as long as you are okay with being oppressed, and as long as you don't care and you're apathetic about your oppression and, you know, having your freedoms taken away. So, any closing thoughts, any last words, any quotes you would like to end with?
Well, I can think of a lot of quotes, but I guess as for closing thoughts, I would just say that, you know, to anyone listening, to conquer yourself first. You know, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. You know, you are both, for man to conquer himself, you know, it's like creating a statue. You're both the chisel and the marble by which you create, you know, by which you create the image of what you want to be. You know, it's not easy, and in fact, it's very painful, but it needs to be done in order to have any form of greatness.
Absolutely.
You know, so, again, like we mentioned an innumerable amount of times now, change your diet, you know, quit watching porn. Those are probably some of the two biggest things. I mean, those
get
are
up,
like rites of
up,
passage for young
get
men.
Up and lift weights.
Yeah, that
get
too.
Up and
fucking
go lift,
lift
weights.
Yeah, absolutely. Fucking lift.
Do some, you know, fucking deadlifts. If you got a bad back, go do deadlifts.
Do things that are conducive to high testosterone levels and everything antithetical to the sedentary lifestyle in which most of us live.
To give you guys an idea of what me and the armorist here did before starting this podcast here. We literally went in my backyard and we deadlifted a 110 pound rock, overhead pressed on a 110 pound rock, and did whatever kind of workouts we can imagine with a probably 200 pound log, and various other exercises to do with what we can do with trees, logs, and rocks in my backyard.
And bags of sand.
And yes, bags of sand. Following that, we cooked and ate 3 steaks and a rotisserie chicken with protein shakes and milk. So, don't be a soy boy. Don't be a beta male. Don't be a cuck. Get up, do something, and take life by the horns. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time. Out.